Hello and welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. Tate Duryea and Ryan Gibson coming to you live, or maybe not so live, but pre-recorded. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing good. Yeah, it's fun to be in the studio and recording with you and getting one of my good friends, one of the most enthusiastic, positive, awesome real estate investors that lives here locally in Seattle on the show. And by the way, she was on a reality TV show for flipping houses.
That's right.
So if you're ever wondering about what really goes on in those reality TV shows about flipping houses, we are going to tell you about what really goes on. Is it real? Is it fake? Is it real and fake? Or is it just all fake? I don't know.
But right.
we're going to go into that because we're going to ask Leica exactly what it is and what it isn't. She's going to tell all on the show just for you, our listeners. So you're going to learn about, hey, when I'm watching these HDTV things, are they setups or are they real? The other thing that's really cool is Leica is now an author of a book, and it's going to tell you all the different ways you can make money in real estate. And we wanted to give you kind of a sneak peek of what's in her book. And if you want to order her book, it'll be in the show notes. You can order on Amazon. You can also go to Amazon to watch her reality
flipping episode,
TV flipping show. Yeah. So that'll also be in the show notes as well.
Yeah. So Leica is unbelievable. She was on episode 54. She's done over $100 million in real estate development over her career. And this is in flipping and multifamily. She also sells luxury real estate. She's an agent as well. So a wealth of knowledge, has a meetup group with over 3,000 members in it. Excited to get onto the show. And her new book is called Return on Real Estate. It's published by Bigger Pockets. So definitely check that out. Let's get to the show.
Let's do it.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Leica, welcome back to the show. How have you been?
I have been so good, and I'm really just excited to hang out with Ryan and you, Tate.
Thanks. Yeah, we're excited to see you. It's been, what, 2 years, I think, since you were last on the show. If you haven't listened to the first episode, go back, check it out. It's episode 54. It was great. We were talking about flipping, talking about multifamily, all that stuff. So Leica, pleasure to have you back on. What have you been up to in these last few years?
Oh my God, so much. I have been on a TV show for starters and also wrote first book. So
congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell us about the TV show.
Okay, the TV show is a house flipping show called Million Dollar Zombie Flip. It is on Amazon Prime and I'm a whole episode, so go watch me.
Okay.
It's a really cool show that follows a flip from start to finish, with the main character, that's James Daynard. And it was so fun to shoot. I pretended to be a brand new flipper, so that was awkward, but otherwise it was just a great show and great fun to shoot.
Why did you have to be a brand new flipper? They wanted that for the show, for the story?
Yeah, we got it. We got to get into this.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Shooting the TV show has now made me realize that everything you see on TV is false.
Oh yeah.
It was not really my house. I am not a brand new flipper. I did not do the renovation. It wasn't my design. And I didn't make any money. But it was all there.
So it wasn't even a house that you flipped. It was just like some...
Nope. It was not.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
So they reached out to you and said, hey, we want you to be on this show because you flip houses. And then they gave you a house to flip that wasn't even yours and it wasn't even your design.
It was James, and James wanted me to shoot the show with him. And so, yeah, his team found the house, his team renovated it. But I pretended like I was the investor on TV, and I got to shoot with my friends. So that was a lot of fun.
So, I mean, why wouldn't they just hire professional actors? No offense. I mean, you're amazing,
yeah.
Right? But like, why would they need a real flipper doing a fake flip? That just, to me, that just doesn't sound like, what's that all about?
I don't know. I have no idea. But I guess if someone like looked me up, at least I'm a flipper. So
there you go.
That part is real.
Yeah.
Speaking of, if anybody hasn't listened to episode 54 and heard about your background, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about what you have accomplished in your illustrious career?
Yes. So I started investing in real estate 11 years ago now, almost as old as Ryan is, but 11 years. And I started flipping homes because I wanted to make a quick buck. That was the absolute truth. And then I realized there's anything but a quick buck. So, you know, rewards are for the ones that stick it out and play the long game. And so it's now been a whole decade of flipping homes. Like, I mainly buy distressed real estate. So through that, I've done land subdivisions, DADUs, which is like a hot thing in my market. I'm a real estate broker.
What's a DADU?
A DADU is a detached accessory dwelling unit.
Okay.
And to increase density in homes, because there's such a lack of inventory, our city passed a bill, or our state passed a bill, that you can actually build a backyard cottage in the backyard of your home. If the lot size is right, there's a whole bunch of, you know, stipulations, but you can build another structure and then subdivide and sell it off separately. So I've done a bunch of those. So it's been a really interesting real estate market. I've seen the ups and the downs and the in-betweens, but it's been such a great industry to be in this last decade.
Wonderful.
So it was a fake flip on this show. Sorry, I can't get off this, right? you know, love your background, but people can listen to that on the other episode. So it's a fake flip at a fake house, but was it realistic in the numbers? Was it kind of reality otherwise, or was it just kind of a married random house or whatever? So
no, it was 100% realistic on the numbers. It is exactly what we paid for it, or what they paid for it. It was exactly the amount of money we spent on renovations. And then we sold it for the price that they said that they sold it on the show.
Okay.
So even though it's fake, people could still learn from the show and they could take away like kind of what goes on and how it works.
And then mistakes that new investors make along the way.
Right.
Whether it's construction or acquisition or disposition, whatever it is.
That's great.
Very cool. We'll have to link to that in the show notes.
Don't be surprised if you're going to be on season 3.
Yeah.
I should tell James to call you and get you on my...
Ryan's going to be on Storage Wars.
No, I'd love to go. I'd love to do that. That'd be fun. Yeah. I mean, it'd be super cool. I'd love that.
All right. Like, tell us about the book. You wrote a book.
I did write a book. It's actually right here. It's called Return on Real Estate, and it's Creative Strategies to Cash Flow or Cash Out.
Amazing.
And I wrote this book basically to sum up the last 11 years in real estate, because there was a time when I would put a house on the market and get $300K over ask. But also there's been a time when I put a house on the market and 3 months go by and we don't have a single offer. And so it's just about staying nimble in any market and finding ways to exit deals in a way that you can either cash flow or you can cash out in any market. So it's just got a bunch of strategies that I've personally used with real life examples of how I executed on those deals.
Love it.
Yeah.
That's great. Can you give us a little teaser? How's the book structured? What are some of the main takeaways from the book? And not to give away the story, but to get people interested so they want to go order it and give it a read.
Okay. So I have two young kids, and when they were really little, their favorite kind of book was the Choose Your Adventure book. Right. And that's how my book's been written. It's a Choose Your Adventure book for real estate investors. Whether you're a long-term holder or you're like a quick, like, I want to change my strategy and go on to the next one.
I like that. I've never heard of a real estate book that's been written like a Hardy Boys adventure. This is great.
It is. It's so fun. So every chapter discusses a strategy. And at the end of the chapter, we talk about how a certain character can use that strategy, but also give you really good tips and tricks on what you could do if you are Pivot Peyton or Long-Term Logan. So it's just a really fun book.
That's super cool. I love that. I love it. What a good idea.
Because see, the absolute truth is I am not a reader. So I wrote this book for the non-readers just to keep them excited and wanting more, because I lose interest very quickly. And so I'm like, okay, if there's someone like me, and especially real estate strategies can be so boring, I'm like, what's going to have them keep flipping that page? So that's why.
Is it on Audible? Because that's the only way I'm going to actually, quote unquote, read it.
It's on Audible. It's on Amazon Prime. It's on the Bigger Pockets website. It is published by Bigger Pockets, which I was so grateful for.
Amazing.
Nice.
Yeah.
And what, how would you say, you narrated the book, you said, right?
I wrote it on Audible. Yeah. I did not narrate it because I was in time, which I'm so sad about because my favorite Audible is Matthew McConaughey's biography, and he narrated it himself. And that's why I keep listening to it, because I'm like, oh my gosh, he's so fun. So I wish I was narrating it, but I'm not.
Oh, that's too bad.
That's okay. Well, we won't hold it against you. We'll link to that in the show notes so that you can buy a copy. I think that's really cool. I definitely am going to pick up a copy. Thanks, Leica.
Yes.
All right. Well, I want to get into what you're seeing in the market today, right? I know that, like you said, in the book, you talked about how you could just list a house, you'd get 300 over asking. You know, that's changed, right? And so how is a new investor to fare? Because it was a really fun time, let's admit, like circa 2016, 17, 18, 19, 20.
Yep.
How much fun was this, right? We'd buy a house. We would barely have to do anything to it. Put it on the market. Boom, it sells.
Lending was easy.
And then all of a sudden.
Yep.
Yeah, lending was easy.
Yeah, you renovate it. It goes up in value. Easy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was kind of fun to throw a real estate conference. It was kind of fun to throw real estate meetups. Everybody was like, yours have stayed really consistent, but I would imagine it's gotten a little harder for the in-person. It's gotten a little harder just kind of in general in real estate. Like it's not that it's down. It's just sort of different. So what are you doing differently today that maybe you didn't do prior to the run-up of like 2021?
I'm extremely, extremely conservative in my underwriting. And I think I've always been, because I really strongly believe that, you know, you cannot overpay for a deal. It doesn't matter. Like I always walk away from things. I'm like, okay, someone else wants to buy it for more than me. That's great. But now more than ever, I'm like, I'm not going above and beyond. Like I'm not the first one in the door paying you whatever money you ask for. I just negotiated a deal, $120,000 off what my initial offer price was. And it's because our market, Ryan, especially, is so driven by tech. And with all the tech layoffs, the H-1B visa situation, there's so many people that cannot afford to buy that were just maybe, I don't know, swimming in money a couple of years ago. And there's so much uncertainty on just where they're going to end up in the next 5 years that this is just not the time to be taking risks. I'm seeing homes today. Actually, I live in a pocket called Redmond, Washington, which is where Microsoft is headquartered. And I have a flip in Redmond that if I sold 6 months ago would have gone $200,000 over ask, but today has been sitting for 40 days. There's nothing wrong with the home. The home has been very like luxury finishes, high-end reno, all permits pulled, and it's not selling. And so I just feel like we are in a different market. This is the market of price drops, get the first offer you can and get out of the deal. That's just on flips. On long-term holds, it's a whole other story because tenant laws are more rigid now than ever before. And so I can't, like I'm in the middle of an eviction that's taking me 5 months. I had squatters that, you know, no one wanted to touch those squatters. I had to go make a social media video and get cops involved and all that good stuff. So I just feel like there's so many more hurdles that, and it's super challenging, especially for a new investor coming in to navigate this market.
Right. I was just talking to a newer investor earlier today and he was sharing with me, you know, he's like, yeah, I want to buy some real estate, but you know, I'm looking at this stuff in Florida that traded hands in 2020 for 400 grand or 450 and now it's 900. And it's like, I just don't see how that's a good investment. If I buy it now at 900, like where's the appreciation over the next 10 years? I've really been echoing this sentiment that I think if I had a crystal ball, I think we're entering what will be the lost decade in residential. I think that we're going to see very flat price appreciation in the residential sector over the next 5 to 10 years, because we've seen this big run up over post COVID, cheap debt, lots of money printing, everybody's rich and moving. And all of a sudden, the musical chairs just stopped. The housing market has frozen. A report just came out that this year or last year, it was the lowest mobility on record, right, Ryan? So the lowest number of Americans moved since the census started recording this data ever. So people just aren't moving. They're not transacting. The housing market is sort of frozen until we see, I think, a combination of lower mortgage rates that can compete with a lot of these low, you know, high 2% to low 3% mortgage rates that are locked in, and meaningful wage growth. I don't think that we're going to see much of a price appreciation in the residential sector. That's my forecast. I could be wrong, but I'd love to get your take on that.
Yeah, I'm seeing it now in our area. Like I said, I am part of a luxury brokerage, and we were just talking about how the over 5 million price point in King County, we have 150 homes. We've never had that many homes over $5 million in our market in the history of our market being, of our market existing. So I am seeing a few price points though, in the 1.5 to 2 million price point or 1.5 to 3 million price point in my area are going fast. We still do have an extreme lack of inventory. Now, I don't know how that's going to change in the spring market, but we do right now still have a lack of inventory. Like, we have enough buyers for the homes that we have listed. But what I am seeing is buyers are getting more and more picky. They just don't want to make a move until the house is absolutely perfect and checks every box. And so buyers, like, I am looking for my next primary, and I've said no to a million homes because I'm like, I want to buy the right home.
Right.
And then we're seeing a lot of inspections, like people actually doing home inspections before they buy the property. Long feasibility.
What a concept.
What a concept. No, like multiple offers, like situations. Even now, if the house is hot and it's priced right, they're still getting just below asking.
Right.
There's just not a multiple offer situation. So I agree with you in the sense that it is going to soften, but it's still seasonal. I do think in my market, January to April is still going to be hot. We'll see the most number of buyers we will in the year during those months, but it's not going to be like a crazy appreciating market. Home prices will remain flat.
Now, do you think, you know, and I don't want to be political on this podcast. I just want to be realistic with some of the things that I've heard and seen, but you know, in the Seattle and the Washington State Metro, there's been a lot of changes politically that have made more tax burden on its residents.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that do you think is impacting the residential market with people, A, moving away and not moving here anymore, and B, sort of, you know, people starting to think about maybe second homes or redomiciling their residence? Because, you know, and where, and what, like, what trend is that? Because if you kind of know where the puck is going, maybe it's they're leaving Seattle for Wyoming, Montana, or, you know, Sun Valley or something like that more permanently. And that could be a new market where a lot of the higher end investors are going and living, you know. And we're recording this, you know, shortly after the New York mayor campaign.
Yeah.
And I mean, talking about major political landscape shift there, you know, I was at a real estate conference in Florida and where DeSantis was speaking, and, you know, he's like, yeah, if he gets elected, you know, he's going to be the best real estate agent I have, you know, because people are going to be flocking to Florida in droves, you know, out of New York. I mean, I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but, you know, how do you think about sort of like bigger changes that are happening? Because these things weren't, I don't think, as big of a deal as well prior to sort of lacking mobility and interest rates rising and the market slowing down. Now you've got like a little bit of a kind of a political shift potentially in place about where people want to live.
Yeah.
Because I think you're getting into this trench warfare of like the hard right and the hard left. And people are kind of voting with their feet and saying, I don't want to live here because I'm going to get taxed to death. So they moved to more, you know, have you kind of seen that or heard that or started investing out of state like that?
So it's really interesting because the investors are I do work with a lot of tech investors or like people that have high paying W-2 jobs that want to buy real estate, but are in tech. So is a couple different things. I feel like the people that are moving are either ultra rich and own companies like Jeff Bezos that wants to move away to not have that tax burden. But there's also a lot of W-2 techies in the market that can afford to move because their employer is saying it's a return to office environment. And so those are the people that are also wanting to invest in real estate because they want to offset their W-2 income. So I actually have a lot of clients right now scrambling to find those properties, like rental properties that they can close on ASAP before the end of the year to kind of take out the tax burden for next year. So it's very conflicting, but these are also the same buyers or the same pool, I would say, that don't want to be landlords in Washington state because we're such a tenant-friendly state. So there's so much conflicting behavior. Now, these people don't want to invest out of state because nothing appreciates like our market does. So unless they are skiing and want to invest in Park City, or there's some, you know, like snowbirds that want to go back to Florida during the winter months, they are still buying in Seattle.
Yeah.
And especially with the new HB, the new bill, HB 111, I want to say, where there's so much emphasis on middle housing and the city's making those, the permitting timelines easier and lots are more buildable. These extremely savvy, intelligent, high net worth individuals are looking for lots that they can also build on in addition to maybe renovating the existing structure.
Okay. So someone who's listening to this show that's like living in Georgia, who has no idea about the Seattle market, what Leica just laid out is like the riches and the niches, right? She knows this market and knows what the demographic undertones are, right? Yes, unfavorable tenant landlord laws. Yes, it's not getting any better tax wise, right? But there's still high net worth individuals, i.e. like tech professionals, that are looking not only for property to buy, but property in Seattle to buy, and where it's an appreciating market. So I think the lesson here is this isn't just like a podcast to talk about Seattle real estate. It's about deeply understanding a market.
Absolutely.
And knowing what is going on.
And the nuances.
Yeah. And working, not to selfishly, pitch Leica's, ability as a real estate agent and as a developer, but, getting with people like her to know your market and to know like what the nuances of a market, can be, because if you just blindly go
and this brings us back to the beginning of this conversation, which was, it was so fun back in 2015, 2016, right? You just buy it and it's all great. And you put tenants in it and it cash flows and it goes up in value and yay, you're a real estate investor. And that isn't the reality today. The reality today is you got to be a lot more savvy. You have to be a good negotiator. You have to understand your market. You have to understand, what bills are potentially being passed or have been passed in your state. You got to understand what types of real estate are going to make the most sense in your market. You just said land for middle market housing with room to build. That is a very specific niche within the quote unquote Seattle market. And those niches exist in every market in the US. You just really have to get deep into the weeds on what particular strategy works.
I mean, that's the beauty of real estate. I feel like in any market, there's money to be made.
Absolutely.
In any market.
Yeah.
I mean, if you bought right now and you held it for 10 years, you're going to make money. There's no question about that.
If you bought in 2007 and you bought all cash right before, you're fine. You're fine, right? Because the value came down, but if you weren't over leveraged and you weren't negatively cash flowing, you're fine. You just hold it through the valley and it appreciates eventually. And so we always say that time is very kind to real estate investors, right? If you wait long enough, every deal will make money. But
it's
yes,
like a bad haircut. It'll grow back.
That's right.
There you go. Unless you're balding or something, but
it's a hell of a statement with a guy with the head of hair that Ryan has.
Hey, I cut my hair about every 3 or 4 weeks and it just grows back. It's weird. Some hair, and some markets the hair grows back faster, and some markets
right.
It doesn't grow back.
That's
at all.
Right.
So I would be careful. Make sure you're in a market that
exactly
you're gonna have a full head of hair with.
You know what that analogy is right there is population growth.
Yeah.
Population growth. That for any type of real estate, if you're listening out there and you're new to the idea of buying real estate, it doesn't matter whether you're investing in self-storage, whether you're investing in multifamily, single-family homes, you need population growth.
Totally.
That is what fuels, you know, valuations.
Right.
Well, Leika, the I want to kind of get into something that you said about your book. You know, the different journeys that the kind of pick your adventure. You know, can you kind of share with us what are some of the adventures I can go on in your book? You know, kind of go through that if you wouldn't mind.
I love that question. Okay. So many adventures because I've lived through them all. So there's, again, the real estate that we own is expensive real estate because it's an expensive market. So I'm constantly refinancing or like I'm selling and buying bigger real estate. So for me, there was one adventure that I'll tell you about that has been so lucrative when things get tough. It's the length of stay adventure, which means you can use your property to midterm rent, short-term rent, long-term rent. And if things, you know, change one way or another, like we have in our market, like we have the World Cup coming to the Soccer World Cup coming to Seattle next year. And so it is a great short-term rental market. So I didn't want to change my rentals into long-term because I want to maximize on the short-term rental potential for next summer. So I'm midterm renting something now in order to be able to short-term rent it next summer and then long-term rent it potentially after that. Great property for that. Another cool adventure is the whole ADUs and DADUs adventure, like adding accessory dwelling units, detached accessory dwelling units, building townhomes, building duplexes. It is so fun to get into it because there's so much equity to be made on potentially something that you already own. And then there's the adventure of just owning what you have, but then 1031, refinancing, just selling it as is in order to be able to cash in on that equity. So there's so many adventures. There's the rent by room adventure. There's a fix and flip adventure. There's a lot.
That's incredible.
What was your favorite one?
Okay.
What's your favorite one to go? What was your favorite one to go on in the last decade?
Fix and flip.
Yeah.
Fix and flip is one of the hardest ways to make money. But if you get really good at it, if you get really, like, you have to build your network to get the best deals. So your acquisition has to be on point. But once you get it, what do you do with it? Can you subdivide the lot? Then hold on to it. Can you add structures? Then dive into development. But if nothing, if you just flipped it, if you just fixed it up and flipped it, you know, finding or making sure that you have the right design choices, making sure that you are positioning it in the right space at the right time. I mean, the amount of money you can make off of fix and flip, doing it right, which 99% of people don't know how to do it right. They fail on one aspect of it or the other, whether it's financing, whether it's selling it, hiring the wrong real estate broker. And then the thing that I see, and this is really sad, and it's not being offensive to you guys at all, but a lot of guys that flip homes cannot design for shit.
So true.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, just hire really good interior designers. That's all I
would
say.
There we go. There we go. So good.
Fix and flip.
Yeah. You mean Eddie Bauer green and yellow are not the colors right now?
No.
Is that
never happened, okay. Ryan. Never happened.
We talked quite a bit about flipping on episode 54 when you were first on. And I'd love to touch on that a little bit more because we don't talk much about flipping these days. In fact, unless you're tuning into HGTV, I feel like that.
And seeing Leika on HGTV.
That's right. And Amazon Prime. I feel like flipping isn't in the spotlight that it was for a while.
Yeah.
Do you think that this is still a good flip market? And what are your top markets that you think are great for flipping and why? And what are some tidbits of wisdom that you give to somebody that thinks that they might want to go flip a house?
I will tell you that it is an extremely crucial talent to develop. Because if you can take a distressed property and stabilize it, right, whether you flip it or rent it or hold it or whatever you do with it, then you're able to make money in any market because you're always going to buy below market value And then you're putting in sweat equity and hustle and grit to be able to raise equity in any market. And if nothing, you can cash out, refinance, and put a tenant in there.
Absolutely.
So imagine if you can do that in a market like today's, and then when if interest rates go down, if demand for housing goes up, like, you are golden. And so I just feel like it's a talent that everyone should have. And you cannot learn that by reading a book or watching a TV show. It is something that you have to go do. You have to understand the downfalls and the pitfalls that happen when you buy a distressed property like that and you pay millions of dollars, and you have to actually execute on the plan. But I will say that you can do that in any market, even today. I speak to a lot of fix and flippers. Like, I've just come back from the Bigger Pockets conference where everybody from every market was at the conference. And I speak to a lot of new investors, seasoned investors. People are still buying great deals.
Can I just unpack that just a little? We'll go a layer down into that. So when I used to flip houses, and this was like 10 years ago in a completely different market, and I had this attitude that I had to be all into the property for less than about 60% of what I thought the property would sell for. So for example, if I had a $100,000 house that I purchased, or if I had a house that I thought was worth $100,000 when I was done with the renovation, I would have had to have been all in on that house for $60,000 or less. So that it gives me a $40,000 buffer to make mistakes, take longer, sell it for less than I thought, whatever it might be, right? So that might mean your renovation's $20,000 and you're buying the house now for $40,000, just to be clear. And then your holding costs are also considered in that. As the market heated up, I heard people kind of go to 70% and then 80%, and then I heard even 85%. Where is that today for you? What would you say your sort of, and then the market sort of fell apart, as we've been discussing, not falling apart, but it just sort of plateaued. Kind of what do they call that leverage or value that you create in there?
Yeah. For me, it's, I think, between 70 and 75% today. Below 70%, I hit a home run. And I did. Like, I just bought a property. It's beautiful. I bought it for way under asking or way under market value because I had a relationship with the seller. So I hit a jackpot on that. But mostly it's between 70 and 75%. But the other thing that I'm really good about, and I think it takes a long time to get here, and it didn't happen overnight, I'm going to preface by saying that, is I will buy something that is at the 70% mark, but I'm always able to take up the selling price a notch, 100K, 150K. So then when I look back, I bought it at like a 60% of the ARV. So it just depends on, you know, how well you can execute on it.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And that comes down to experience, building a team, building relationships. That takes time, right? So, you know, it's certainly not something for the faint of heart. It's certainly not something that you want to do maybe once and then it either works or doesn't work and you just walk away. It's something you kind of want to commit to because it takes some time to learn the ropes. And just like learning how to fly an airplane, you're not going to be that good at it the first few times you go up, right? So,
yeah, exactly. I mean, there's so many little nuances. What does the buyer want in that market? How can you tweak your floor plan to add that extra bath? Or what can you do with the garden space that your neighbors or your other competitors are not doing? So there's a few little things that you can add. They're called sizzle features that you add to the house that kind of takes your project above what is available in the market. And always picking neighborhoods that truly lack inventory. Again, in any market, if there's a prime street and you end up finding a project on that prime street, that'll sell in any market.
Yeah, it totally makes sense.
When even if the rest of your city is, you know, is just not competitive, it could be that one street.
And if you get in, you know, I always like to, I know something that you're very good at, Leica, is like you could also, you know, if you get in that $100,000 house example where I thought I could sell the house for 100 and I put 60 in and then the profit's about 40K, you're saying, you know, you're at about 70 to 75 now, or you'd be all in for 70K or 75K to sell a $100,000 house. I think one of the strategies that you're going to talk about in your book is, okay, maybe you get to sell the house and you're not getting the offers you want, and you could turn that into a BRRRR. You know, you could rent out the house, and now maybe you could refinance it into longer term debt and hold that as a rental. And I think that's what's kind of cool about flipping, is like, you can, you know, as long as there's like equity and you've got the right location, right street, it seems like those properties could be repurposed into something else. And I think that's something that investors need to be thinking about.
Exactly. Like, if you are about to buy a deal, whatever it is, whether it's you're buying a lot to develop self-storage, or you're buying a distressed building, if you can find multiple exits right off the get-go, then you're fine. You're going to be fine no matter what, no matter what the market does, because you can always pivot strategies.
Absolutely.
Keep in mind too, when you're thinking about flipping a house, so to speak, you can marry different strategies. If you wanted to buy an Airbnb, but you found a house that would be perfect for it because you have, you know, four bedrooms and a big backyard and a rooftop deck, and you're like, but it needs a bunch of work, you can flip it and not sell it. You can make it a short-term rental and get all those tax benefits that we talk about. I want to talk a little bit about midterm rentals, because that's actually something I don't think we've ever talked about on the show. Who's the demographic for midterm, and where do you list a property if you want to get midterm rentals? And what is a midterm rental, first of all, for anybody that doesn't understand?
A midterm rental is when someone stays in the house for 30 days and longer. So 30 days to 6 months is the ideal midterm rental phase, I would say.
I typically would think of this as being like a traveling nurse or a physician or something like that, but I'm sure there are other demographics that rent midterm.
Yes. So traveling nurses are very popular during COVID. Now it could be people that have insurance claims on their homes. So their roof, you know, caved in, and now they need a midterm rental for 3 months while insurance is working on their home. So insurance claims are, like, I think in our area, one of the bigger midterm rentals that we see at my houses. And so there's a couple different websites. There's Ale Housing, A-L-E Housing, for furnished midterm rentals. And most midterm rentals typically are furnished because this is someone that's coming to stay for a longer period of time. They want it furnished. It's like a short-term rental, but they want to stay longer. So typically it's furnished. So Ale Housing is great. Another very popular one great founder, great company, Furnish Finder. Furnish Finder can help you rent homes by the room, by the home. Amazing. Then there's companies like PadSplit and Hemlane that will help you do rent by room, rent by unit. So again, those can be midterm, those can be long-term, but there's a whole like array of different websites that, and every city has its own like little company that does it too.
This is great.
In North Carolina, that's called Abode, I want to say, or something like that. I can look it up. But they are fantastic. And I've been convincing them to come to Seattle for a long time. But they're all like, they're in 8 or 9 different markets, but they're not in our market as yet.
I love this because, you know, this episode has gone a lot of different ways. And I hope what it's doing for you as you're listening to this, listener out there, is turning on light bulbs and making you think, oh, wow, there's a lot more ways to think about, you know, investing in that deal that I thought maybe would be cool to put an offer in on than maybe I was originally thinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent.
Well, Aika, one more time, what's the name of your book?
Sure. It's called Return on Real Estate.
Perfect.
We'll link to it in the show notes.
Yeah. What's the best way to go buy it?
Amazon.
Amazon. Okay.
Like, if you go on Amazon, you can buy my book. You can watch my TV show.
Nice.
I love it.
I like it. Very Seattle of you.
Very. And please don't forget to leave me a review.
Yeah. Everybody. Okay. If you love this podcast and you love this episode, well, either one, go leave a 5-star review for Laika. That would mean a lot to her, a lot to us. She spent time writing this book, trying to drop knowledge on folks. Leave her a 5-star. And if you didn't like the book, then don't leave a review. Just move on. No, I'm sure.
Thank you, Ryan.
Speaking of which, if you haven't left us a review on our show on iTunes or whatever, please leave us a good review. It helps us get the word out to more people if you like the show. So
that's right.
Thank you.
So I can't believe I was here 2 years ago. So how long have you been doing this show?
2 years. We've been doing the show for 2 years. Yeah, March of
132 weeks. I can tell you right now. That's the episode count. So,
yep.
That's amazing.
Here we are.
I mean, amazing, because you guys started when podcasts were like such a thing, and then you're still going on. And I feel like most of the podcasts I used to listen to, they've just disappeared. So
they've disappeared. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, we're not going anywhere. We'll be here for your financial education. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Leika, how do people find out more about you if they want to follow along your journey?
You can reach me on LinkedIn or my Instagram. Instagram is just so much more fun. LinkedIn's all serious. But yeah, one of those ways.
I love it.
And you have a meetup. Hold on. You got a
meetup. That's right. We got to plug the meetup.
Yep. So if you have a Seattle layover, you can look up the meetup. It's called Real Estate at Work.
Yes. And Ryan's been a speaker like multiple times.
Yes.
Loves him. So thank you, Ryan.
You're welcome. And how do you find out about the meetup? So if you're marrying up a Seattle layover with, or if you live in Seattle or the Washington area.
Yes.
Where do you go for that?
We are on meetup.com. So just go find us. I think we're one of the most visited meetups. We have over 3,000 members on it. So come find us.
Yeah, check it out. It's a great way to learn, educate. You have everybody at your meetup from like mortgage brokers to house flippers to rental property.
NFL players, if you want a little mindset coaching, like we have them all.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Amazing.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for having me.